Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, January the 2nd, 2015. We welcome you to the new year. Not sure if Dale's going to be with us today or not. He hadn't committed beyond 2014. So, Dale, if you're on there, if you'll press 1, that'll let me know. I did get a message when I first signed on to Blog Talk that said that they're having server maintenance, so hopefully it will stay up and running during your show because it says it will be off and on at various times. So hopefully it will keep running for this next hour. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Yes, hopefully it will keep running for this next hour. It's kind of a strange time. You'd think they'd do it in their server maintenance in the middle of the night. But anyway, we appreciate everybody who chooses to join us, and welcome to the show. Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Is the title of a free book that you can download from our website that outlines the essence and the core of what it is that we're doing with first century Aramaic forgiveness. And that word forgive, as our culture teaches it, is totally backward. We're going to suggest, and many people are shocked when I say this, that you never forgive anyone ever again for anything. And the reason we say that is because you can't forgive anyone for anything, because forgiveness is not about letting somebody else off the hook. And cleaning that one up in one's mind tends to lead to much, much confusion. So we want to clear up the confusion. The word forgive represents a tool for removing what never belonged in your life. What never belonged in your life, literally. The very capacity for the human mind to produce any form of hostility or fear is an anomaly. It doesn't belong in us. It's a mistake. And so, forgiveness is about removing the mistake and all of its effects. So as you engage and entertain the actual first century Aramaic idea of forgiveness, what happens is, when your mind is in upset, disturbance, pain, anger, sadness, fear, rage, guilt, grief, what we invite you to do is to apply the tool of forgiveness, which you can find on our website. It's there free with lots and lots and lots of free support. And you apply the tool of forgiveness not to the person that you're blaming currently, not to the situation that you think is the cause of your pain, but to the actual cause of your pain, which is internal. And as you apply forgiveness internally, you literally remove, literally take out of the structure the very capacity for any form of hostility or fear. And as you do that, you undo the past. You undo what is in your structure that is based in error. The first question we ask in our workshops is, how many have ever held a newborn child? And you'll notice when you hold a newborn, there is an experience. The experience is this direct, awesome, active presence of love. And you watch how little it takes for people to give that up. how easily they can say, my human life and my relationship with love is not worth the powder to blow it to hell. I'd rather do hostility right now. I'd rather be angry with you. I'd rather blame you. I'd rather find somebody or something wrong in my life. I'd rather blame myself. And people go off on past experiences instead of bringing forward the truth of who they are, instead of valuing our human lives, the awesome gift from the Creator that we were given. People tend to value their past, their rage, their guilt, their grief, their defenses, and especially the fact that there's always something wrong in the world, something to complain about, and somebody to blame for it. Something to blame for it. The reason I'm miserable is something outside of me is wrong. Well, rear it off with that. The reason you're miserable, if you're miserable, is because there's something inside of you called misery, and you can get rid of it. And as you do, everything begins to change. When we become willing to be responsible for and own what's going on in our lives, then we change the game. And so we're here to support you changing your game if your game has been based in hostility or fear. And we're here to invite your support if your game is functioning as a human being, as that awesome active presence of love that we are designed to be. So we welcome you to the show. We're moving into our fourth year of doing this radio show. I think it's actually the end of this month, Jeannie, the 30th, I think we started the show 4 years ago.
The 31st.
31st. So on the 31st of this month, we'll be moving into our fifth year. I guess it'll actually be the 1st of February. So we're delighted that you're here. Let's check and see if Dale is with us. Do we have Dale with us, an 828 number, sweetie?
No, he is not.
Okay. Well, let's see if Dr. Tim is with us. We'll see how that young man is doing.
I have him on.
I am here.
Okay. Welcome, sir. How do you be?
I'm doing well. I'm detecting a little healing crisis in Jeannie's throat.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's been cleansing for a little while now, moving through some layers.
Well, sending love and healing wishes for the speedy release of what doesn't belong there. And I woke this morning with a deeper realization of probably a whole slew of different things. And it showed up in my mind as the phrase, life is not a zero-sum game.
Tell us about it.
Well, it just has to do with probably resonating a number of different things I've been reading from Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery. It's pretty much the opposite of the culture's belief that says, if I give something away, I've lost it. And a lot of different things in Course in Miracles talks about the only way to have something is to give it to those around me, because we're all connected. We're all the same. And the unity of our existence in this energetic field and the laws of resonance and reciprocity, they all say that if I try to hold on to something and keep it from someone else, I'm depriving myself of it. And so it's not about, I've got, 100 units of love, and if I give all 100 units away, I don't have anything left for myself. It's about, if I've got the energy of love in me, the only way to keep it alive and growing is to extend it in every interaction with every person and everything. And it's not about giving and taking, it's about the flow. And of course, when I had these kinds of deeper realizations, words pretty much fail, but I was left with a very peaceful pleasant sense with the phrase, you know, is it the Course in Miracles lesson, A New Beginning, that you do where they talk about get up in the morning and decide what kind of day you want and then give it to everyone and everything, because that's the only way to get it is to give it away?
That's my favorite lesson, one of my favorite lessons.
Yeah, and so that's just a deeper realization of that truth, that if I want a loving day, I have to go give a loving day. And I can try and pull up on the Kindle where I was reading that in Course in Miracles, but I'm sure you can talk quite well about that. You know, whatever I give away, I get in deeper and richer levels myself. And whatever I try to hold on to, I'm literally depriving it from those around me, so I'm depriving it myself of it.
Well, I think one of the places to apply that one, too, that for me has been really powerful, is to recognize that when I withdraw love from someone, it looks like I'm withdrawing love from them, but the truth is, now that I've withdrawn love from quote-unquote them, it's not available to me. And so it's the restoration of love to the presence of our own being within our own minds, and to bring that in and through behavior toward others that restores us to that presence. And to me, it's just an awesome understanding to have and to apply. You've got a passage to share with us?
Well, I'm turning on the Kindle. Maybe I'll get there. But it's to my mind's eye and ear, it's peppered all through the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery that because we are all connected, anything I try to withhold from someone else, I'm depriving myself of. And everything I give, whether it's of a positive or a negative nature, I'm getting, I'm getting the original. They just get the carbon copy. Where have I heard that before?
And they may not be home for delivery.
Yeah.
Yes. It's an amazing thing to realize how deeply the world has gotten it backwards, and how we've bought into it and our responsibility in that process, and then restoring ourselves to that true essence of love and offering it wherever we go, which of course doesn't mean we have to agree with everybody. It doesn't mean we have to, you know, have everything the way we want it. It just means that whatever it is, you know, when people say, well, does that mean I just let people walk all over me? It's like, no. You can hold people accountable, and you can restrain people from walking all over you, and you can do it with practice from a connected state of love instead of the way that 1,000 generations of the past have done it. Is Julie there, Jean? This is a perfect conversation for the opener that Julie called us with this morning.
Who did you ask? Were they here?
Julie.
Let me find. Let me scroll down to the
number. Julie, if you're there, maybe put your hand up, and the conversation we were having a little earlier this morning, I think, would be perfect here. What a coincidence.
I don't see her.
Oh, okay.
Well, I got a passage that relates to, this is very, very similar to both Way of Mastery and Guy Finley talk about, but it's in A Course in Miracles. It says, communication and the ego-body equation. It says that attack is always physical. When attack in any form enters your mind, you have equated yourself with a body. This is the ego's interpretation of the body. and you don't have to attack physically to accept this interpretation. You're accepting it simply by the belief that attack can get you something you want. If you did not believe this, the idea of attack would have no appeal for you. When you equate yourself with a body, you will always experience depression. When a child of God thinks of himself in this way, he is belittling himself and seeing his brothers as similarly belittled. Since he can find himself only in them, he has cut himself off from salvation. Remember, the Holy Spirit interprets the body only as a means of communication. Being the communication link between God and his separated sons, the Holy Spirit interprets everything you have made in the light of what he is. The ego separates through the body. The Holy Spirit reaches through it to others.
Of course, so, all attack is physical because when we engage in energy, we put it into our physiology, into our own energy system.
Yeah, another line a little bit later on says, communication ends separation. Attack promotes it. So,
lesson 184 from A Course in Miracles is one that that I've always found to be very powerful, and the essence of it.
Michael, did you just give a number?
Yes, lesson 184 in the course.
Lesson 184. Okay, go ahead. Are you there?
There are in all the years that I've worked with the course. There are two paragraphs, and to me it relates to our current conversation. There are two paragraphs that really tie in and have become, were two of the most powerful sections in the course for me in all the work that I've done with it. In fact, for a period of, I'm not even sure how long it was, this goes back to my early days with the course, 25, 28, 29 years ago. And when I came across these two paragraphs, each time I would read them, I would go into instantly an altered state. And then one day I picked, and so I would read them regularly. And then one day I picked the book up and read them, and it was just words on a page again, as it had been, you know, previously. But this, I don't know, a sensitive period for me. Something was opening. Something was processing. I don't know exactly what was happening, but it was really powerful for me. And there are paragraphs down toward the bottom of that particular lesson 184. And it says, it would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world, forgetting them forever, yet were asked to take a teaching function. You have need to use the symbols of the world a while. And, of course, one of the main symbols the world talks about is words and the body being a symbol. It would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world, forgetting them forever, yet were asked to take a teaching function. You have need to use the symbols of the world a while, but be you not deceived by them as well. They do not stand for anything at all, just seeing it is this thought that will give you release from them. They become but means by which you can communicate in ways the world can understand, but which you recognize is not the unity where true communication can be found. Thus, what you need are intervals each day in which the learning of the world becomes a transitory phase, a prison house from which you go into the sunlight and forget the darkness. Here you understand the word, the name which God has given you, the one identity which all things share, the one acknowledgement of what is true. And then step back into the world of darkness. Pardon me. And then step back to darkness, not because you think it real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. So all the words we use are about darkness, and we can use them to dissolve our belief in them, which ties right in with the whole forgiveness process, the dissolution, the removal, the decay of the output of the mind of the past, and the awakening to the light and the truth and the love of the present, which, of course, the past does not particularly want us to do. And I say that sort of mistakenly, because, of course, the past doesn't have a wanter. It only does what we've trained it to do, but we've trained it to hold on to our defenses, our attacks, as though, as that passage you read, Tim, said, as though it could possibly get us something. And it can't get us anything except lost deeper in our darkness.
Yeah, and in the world that teaches that there is loss and that it is a zero-sum game, that if I have 100 units of something, if I give away 50, I've only got 50 left, and if I give away 25, I've only got 25 left. As though the things that I view through these five senses and their very limited view is all the reality that exists. And if I'm operating within those arbitrary and false beliefs, then what I would need to do to protect myself or grow or be safe or be loving is very different. It's directly the opposite of what I would have to do if I lived in a world of infinite energy and eternal energy, in which case, the more I give, the more I receive. And the more I withhold, the more I deprive myself. And yeah, it certainly does go beyond words in a heartbeat.
Yes, and the true and actual world, when we engage in it, for instance, if I have 25 units of love present in my mind, and I extend that to another by extending it and offering it and having another join with it, it increased, and now I have 50 units instead of 25. It's the opposite of the way the world perceives it. And the only habit I need to overcome is the habit of the past, of being buried by the past dynamics. You know, we talk about in the workshop power and commitment. We talk about the idea of personal power as being the ability to be continuously aware of and function out of our highest guidance. But when that old hostility and fear-based mind comes up, it really doesn't want anything to do with our highest guidance. It wants to stick to the good old family feeling. And it's once we realize how self-destructive that is, the willingness to forgive it, the willingness to remove that is just the most awesome thing we can step into. And yet it is the thing that the non-being mind values the most.
Yeah, I think the more I read in Course in Miracles and some of the most convoluted paragraphs and confusing paragraphs, are about this very difference, that we have been trained to believe this, quote, non-being mind is all there is and is the way to protect ourselves, to get what we need, and to move forward. And yet, by definition, it's the thing which keeps us trapped from becoming more of what we can be. It's Guy Finley tells a marvelous story about the problem of identifying with something and having pride in an accomplishment and identifying yourself with that, and then having this thing that you're exalted about and feeling so good about literally become the limitation of you moving on to grow and experience more of what is possible in an ever-expanding, ever-loving, ever-creating universe. And it isn't what we would call fun, but it's only because we've been trained to identify with the non-being mind and the physical realm. But he tells the story of the father, who's a great king, and he has a son and a daughter, and he calls them to him one day when they're of age and says, "Now, I know that because you're going to have to be responsible for either part or all of this kingdom at some time in the future, that I need to expand your responsibilities, and I need to give you some freedoms to do that." So he sends them off to establish a new kingdom outside his realm. And he sends them with all the resources and ministers and armies that they would need. And he tells them, "I want you to go into this new area, and I want you to meet the people and explore the resources and use them wisely and develop a kingdom there that's a direct reflection of the kingdom that you came from." And they think, "Oh, great, we're going to have money and power and stuff. This is fabulous." And they march off, and it's quite a long journey, and they have to learn a lot on the way, and they finally get to this very rough, raw area, and they get to work, and after several years, they've developed this kingdom of sorts, and they're enjoying the harvest one evening, and all of a sudden they hear a thunderous roar, and they walk outside the major tent, and they see an endless expanse of army, black uniforms with white trim, marching toward them. And they get their army together, which is white uniforms with black trim, and they march out trying to defend what they've created in their father's name. But they were just woefully outnumbered, and they had to retreat. And they're shocked that they've lost everything, and they both decide they can't go back to their father and tell him they gave up. So they decide to move out into another area, and maybe if they could establish a kingdom there, then their father would be proud of them, and he would understand that they just got overpowered by something they couldn't deal with, and that's why they lost the kingdom he sent them out there to conquer. So it's rough. It's the new kingdom area is a wilderness area. It's even rougher, and there are fewer minerals and nastier people, but it's not too many months. They're in the new area, and they realize that things are going far better here than they had ever imagined, and it was kind of silly that they were satisfied with what they had in the last kingdom. And Guy breaks into the story and says, and have you ever had a relationship in your life that wasn't really very good for you, or a job where you were just barely getting along and tolerating it because the money was just what you needed to survive, and you clung to it like life itself, and then you got dragged kicking and screaming out of that situation, and you thought it was horrible until one day you woke up and realized, oh, this is a lot better. Well, that's kind of what the son and daughter were going through when they got kicked out of the first kingdom. And it wasn't too long before they had their crop coming in and they had their celebration going and they were feeling very proud of themselves. And here comes the black army with the white trim again. And they're thinking this time, because they've had more time and they've had more people join their forces, maybe they could prevail, but there was no prevailing and they were kicked out again. And they went through time after time of having this great exaltation with what they had created and their pride in what they'd accomplished. And then this tremendous frustration and loss and bitterness because it turned out they were overwhelmed and they were pushed out of what they thought was the best thing could ever have. And then they moved into something else that became an exaltation, and they realized, oh my gosh, this last thing was a limitation. Well, that happened not two or three times, but seven times. And they finally decided, wait, this can't be what Dad had in mind. Let's go back and talk to our father about this. And they make the long journey back to the kingdom, and their dad's not there. So they're waiting around, and this is the kingdom they were born and raised in. But now they're quite more mature as adults, and they're spending some time relaxing and walking around the kingdom. And the daughter goes out and finds at the far end of one of the areas she'd never been in, an enormous warehouse. And when she goes into the warehouse, she opens it up and she is just stunned, speechless, because this warehouse is full of black uniforms with white trim. So she's shocked and stunned, has no words, and she goes back to get her brother to bring him out to show him what she found. And on the long journey back to the big warehouse, it starts to dawn on her, and she gets there with her brother, and she shows him, and he is lividly angry. How could this be? How could our father set us up to achieve these things and then steal them from us? And again, set us up to achieve more and then take them from us. And the daughter says, I think I understand. I think our father needed us to know that it's all his kingdom, that we will never go anywhere or do anything that he doesn't have a hand in. And it's only by us taking pride in and identifying with what we think we've accomplished in that physical realm that we limit ourselves from the next level and the next level that he has in store for us. And this is a lesson we would never learn if we just stayed comfortably in what we had recently achieved and become identified with and then defended violently from the movement of change and energy in the life and the universe. And he says this is part of the ancient wisdom that goes with a statement like, my father's kingdom has many mansions. And it's really mansions within mansions within mansions. It goes beyond the ability of us to perceive it with our five senses. But every time we think we're done, we're not done.
And I think it's awesome to recognize that if we decide to step into a conscious space, that we can be aware of that and go, as the ancient scriptures speak, from strength to strength, that we don't have to get lost in one strength to acquire another, and that as we open to our true creative process, the whole of our lives becomes this creative process, and all we have to do is recognize that if hostility or fear surfaces in us, then it is based in information and energetic patterns founded in loss. And as we apply forgiveness to that loss, it disappears and we go on to the next level and the next step of our creativity and this awesome game of life, so that we literally are conscious creators continuously. We go from conscious creation in strength to the next conscious creation in strength. And to see that if we have the tendency to fall back to something else, that's where our forgiveness work is. That's what needs to be dissolved in order to really truly live in our highest guidance and have true personal power all the time. And of course, one of the things, the games that the non-being mind will play is it will find somebody else to blame for that. Oh, well, if I just get rid of them, then I won't have this problem. And the continuous willingness to open to new levels of creativity, to stay in that state of conscious creation, instead of settling into replicating the past, the replicant mind. It's pretty awesome, and yet the temptation to fall into
the old ways is so deep, and the forgetting is so intense that it takes great willingness and work to keep moving into new levels of what are we going to create, rather than I have to clutch, I have to cling, I have to hold on to something from the past.
Well, and it puts me in mind of Dale's definition from the ancient Aramaic of the word faith. And Dale has defined it from his knowledge as acting from the rooted center of our being as an internal thing. So if I'm acting from my identification with all these monies and all of these objects and buildings and cars that I've amassed, I'm going to have one set of actions dictated for me. And if I act in faith from the rooted center of my being, I'm not identifying with those things, and what action is given to me to do will be very, very different. So have faith. Act from the rooted center of your being rather than your identification with something external. And then I think it opens us up to what you're saying, to move from strength, to move faster and farther than we ever imagined, but in ways that our logical conscious mind can't show us.
Well, and there's where the need for support comes in. There's another lesson, the Course 121, and it's about the unforgiving mind. And there's a paragraph in there that says, forgiveness is acquired. It is not inherent in the mind, which cannot sin. As sin is an idea you taught yourself, forgiveness must be learned by you as well, but from a teacher other than yourself, who represents the other self in you. You know, the non-being mind, made up of all of the dynamics of the past, isn't going to teach itself forgiveness, isn't going to step into willingness, and that's where that helping hand is needed. And of course, for someone who gets caught, especially when they're in their hostility or fear, but they think they already know everything. You know, well, I already got it all handled. It's you that has a problem. The mind that's saying that is in turmoil itself, thinking it has the answers, is in need of a hand up. And the ability to acknowledge, you know, I don't know. I come from a power person dynamic where I have to be perfect and know everything, but the truth is I don't. And so I find myself going in these cycles and circles. So stepping into the willingness to be taught, you know, that's such a huge piece to the puzzle, is the willingness to be taught and the willingness to learn.
So that last one, Michael, was that 122?
121. Lesson 121.
Thank
and again,
you.
It's a paragraph down toward the, about two-thirds of the way down. Forgiveness is acquired. It is not inherent in the mind. Forgiveness must be learned by you as well, but from a teacher other than yourself who represents the other or the true self in you. So there's a true self, which if we were awake to it, we wouldn't be in pain and turmoil in the first place. So someone who has awakened that true self is the person who can give a hand up. And, of course, they are the representative, according to this lesson, of that true self in us when we've fallen into identification with something that isn't who we are. And so the willingness to be in that space of being teachable and to reach the hand out and say, okay, I'm ready for a hand up. I got it. I don't have to know everything. It's a huge piece of learning. This whole lesson from the Course is a really interesting one. It's the title of the lesson is Forgiveness is the Key to Happiness, Lesson 121. And I love its description of the unforgiving mind. If you, it's really quite entertaining to listen to this description and then to really truly be honest with oneself of how much time do I spend there, and what I most want to proclaim, how I know that's probably the exact space that I'm in. So the unforgiving mind is full of fear and offers love no room to be itself, no place where it can spread its wings in peace and soar above the turmoil of the world. The unforgiving mind is sad, without the hope of respite and release from pain. It suffers and abides in mystery, misery, peering about in darkness, seeing not, yet certain of the danger lurking there. The unforgiving mind is torn with doubt, confused about itself and all that it sees, afraid and angry, weak and blustering, afraid to go ahead, afraid to stay, afraid to waken, afraid to go to sleep, afraid of every sound, yet still more afraid of stillness, terrified of darkness, yet more terrified of the approach of the light. What can the unforgiving mind perceive but its own damnation? What can it behold except proof that all its sins are real? The unforgiving mind sees no mistakes, but only sins. It looks upon the world with sightless eyes and shrieks as it beholds its own projections rising to attack its miserable parody of life. It wants life, yet wishes it were dead. It wants forgiveness, yet sees no hope. It wants escape, yet can conceive of none, because it sees its projections, it's the sinful everywhere. The unforgiving mind is in despair, which can offer anything but more despair. Yet it regards its judgment of the world as irreversible and does not see that it has condemned itself to this despair. It thinks it cannot change, for what it hears bears witness that its judgment is correct. It does not ask because it thinks it knows. It does not question, certain it is right. Forgiveness is acquired. It is not inherent in the mind, which cannot sin. As sin is an idea you taught yourself, forgiveness must be learned by you as well, but from a teacher other than yourself, who represents the other self in you. Through him or her, you learn how to forgive the self you think you made and let it disappear. Thus, you return your mind as one to him who is yourself and who can never sin. Each unforgiving mind presents you with an opportunity to teach your own mind how to forgive itself. Each one awaits release from hell through you and turns to you imploringly for heaven here and now. It has no hope, but you become its hope. And as its hope, do you become your own? The unforgiving mind must learn through your forgiveness that it has been saved from hell. And as you teach that, you will learn it. Yet all your teaching and your learning will be not of you, but of the teacher who was given you to show you the way. And then it moves into the practice of a forgiveness exercise. The focus on how forgiveness is the key to the whole game becomes so important, and to recognize that once again it's about dissolution and vacating the whole reality structure of the past and allowing the space within us. You know, there's a powerful line in the Lord's Prayer that can be translated as, carve out a space in us for your wholeness. And as we forgive, we make the space for the wholeness of love to show up in us. And a whole new process begins as we do that. So that's another one of my favorite lessons from the Course.
Delightful.
It is. And Jeannie, let's check in with you. We've got about 15 minutes left, and see if there's anybody with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room that would be good for us to be aware of.
I actually got an email from someone, and she said that she was listening to the show. Let me find it here. I'm flipping back and forth. She says, I'm listening to Dr. Tim and Michael, and I observed that when I actually feel love is when I am giving love, more so than when I'm receiving it. And at the same time she wrote that, Angela wrote in the chat room that she had had a big breakthrough, and that in the Aramaic, when it says love your neighbor as yourself, and that in the Aramaic it says neighbor is anybody that you think about. And she says there's really no choice but to love your neighbor as yourself, because they're all projections in your own head of your neighbor or anybody, everyone else is just a projection of yourself. And so she said she had really gotten a big breakthrough on that one. We do have a hand up.
Well, let's just reinforce that before we actually go to our hand up, and that is that when I am the space of love, loving neighbor, loving self isn't about, you know, something syrupy that the culture has taught us to do, but when I am the presence of love and I hold that active space of love for all of my projections, whoever those projections are of, myself or someone else, if there's anything that is not true in those projections, then those projections dissolve and I'm freed of them. That's forgiveness. So I am freed of my projections of myself as less than or whatever's going on when I can maintain that active presence of love 24/7, 365. And let's go and see what our caller has to say.
Okay, and Angela just wrote in there, yes, that her projections have changed. So that's cool. Our caller is area code 541. You're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Tim, Dr. Michael, Dr. Jeannie, Dr. everyone out there doing this work.
Hey, there,
this is
young
Julie
lady.
From, yeah, hi.
Happy New Year.
This is Julie from Oregon. Happy New Year. Yeah, you know, there's that wonderful Julie in Arkansas, Julie Haberstick, and then there's this wonderful Julie out here on the West Coast. And so I always know which one you're talking about, and she probably
yes.
does. But anyway, lately I have been reading, I think this kind of fits in, I've been reading in The Course in Miracles also in Chapter 8, Section 5, and the sections that precede also. The chapter is called The Journey Back. And what it talks about is the will, the willingness and the will, and that the Section 5 is the undivided will of the Sonship, and that we are really God's will. And so when we're in conflict, it's because we aren't sure where to put our will, which God gave to us. And God is what gives us its power. And I'm just kind of like, I'm just like going shorthand through it. So there's a section before it called The Gift of Freedom. God's will for you is complete peace and joy. And unless you experience only this, you must be refusing to acknowledge his will. And the goal of the curriculum is to know thyself. There's nothing else to seek. So when you get to know who you are, you see yourself more and more clearly aligned with God's will, which is all there is. So I just wanted to mention that section along with the other lessons that you and Dr. Tim have been focusing on. And there are some really great integrative qualities. And, you know, we are on this continual journey of integrating truth and knowledge and learning to create from the higher will. So it is interesting how sometimes the words on the page are alive with energy and other times there's nothing in them for us. And it just goes to show you the journey. And you can come back to the same words again, and they'll be alive again with truth and light. So it's not that it disappears, it's just where our focus is. And as we keep trusting our integration in this process. So thank you, Dr. Tim and Dr. Michael and Dr. Jeannie and Dr. Everyone who's doing this work, for bringing clarity and positive application to this work.
Yeah, and maybe the words on the page were never alive at all. Maybe that's another projection of our minds. And when they're not alive for us, maybe that's the time for us to tap into another level of our human lives and bring that presence of love forward so that it is enlivened in the moment. And to be willing to be in that space where that enlivening presence is active in our minds 24/7, 365. To me, that's one of the goals of the whole process, is to be in that enlivening presence and allow no other graven image to come before it.
That's really nice. Yeah, I like that. You said, but beyond the words, you said a mouthful. Yes. Okay.
Nothing
well,
like
that's
human life.
Mm-hmm. What?
Nothing like human life.
That's yeah. I'm still wondering what that all is, but it's a great discovery if I can hold it in openness and keep the flow going and not lock in to
hold
that
a
word.
Newborn child. Hold a newborn child. Recognize that the energy that we experience with the newborn is what needs to be quickened and enlivened in us. And when it's not, it's because there's something less than that that has been resonated in us, and the activity of forgiveness is what removes that. So that we actually, and you know, it's impossible for the non-being mind to conceive of this, but that we actually come to the place where the activity of love is moving and present in us 24/7, 365, and we stay in that awareness, instead of allowing that awareness to fall into identification with some hostility or fear from the past and some blame that makes it somebody else's fault.
Yeah. One day, and you just triggered a memory in me. One day I got this little message of a way to approach something, whatever it was. You know that expression, what would Jesus do?
Yes.
What would a newborn do?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
the measuring stick
plate.
For behavior.
Yeah.
The best measuring stick I've been able to come up with for behavior is, if you can imagine a newborn doing it, then go for it. If you can't, probably not a good thing to do.
And a newborn is more of this clean slate, all powerful. And so why would I want to put the past on this new thing that I'm being presented with?
Yeah. So being fresh and alive in every moment is the challenge. Fresh and alive at every moment. Bringing the presence of our human beingness to every moment of our lives, and not sinking into the ease and the discomfort, the comfortable discomfort of the past. You know, oftentimes people, when we invite them into doing the work, they say, well, I could be doing that for the rest of my life. That sounds like so much work. That sounds so hard. It's like, well, my input is that following the patterns of the past, the hostilities, the fears, the blames, the guilt, and all of that, is all automatic pilot. It takes zero effort to do that, so it's effortless. It is, and it's a very, very hard way to live. out of those dynamics of the past. The repeated trauma and drama and pain, although it's familiar for most people, is a really hard way to live, but it's effortless. We get mixed up sometimes, the difference between effort and hard. So people say, well, dude, you work all the time. That sounds hard. No, actually, that's an easy way to live, but it takes effort. There's effort required to do your work. There's no effort whatsoever required to stay in the good old family feeling, the dynamic of 1,000 generations that are stuck in inertia. And if you remember the definition of inertia, a body moving in a particular direction, a particular rate of speed, tends to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. And so it's effortless to live in that energetic dynamic. But it's hard. It's tough. It's difficult. It's miserable. But it takes effort. Not hard. It's an easy way to live. But it takes effort to continuously be on guard and continue to be that outside force that keeps changing the direction of the inertia-bound mind, the mind of all the generations, to be awake, continuously awake, definitely takes effort. To be continuously on guard against the game of hostility or fear from the past and to apply forgiveness to it, to remove it when it comes up, takes effort. But oh, it's such an easy way to live by comparison.
Yes. We have consensus here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you have an awesome move. You're the best one yet of your eternal life. Our time is running just about out. We're down to a few seconds, so I'll just say that we appreciate you, Dr. Tim, and hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. Julie, thank you for your call, and Jeannie, and We invite you to come and join us. We're going to be at Unity in the Woods in Bradenton on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and then 11:30 and then a potluck lunch. And why is this happening to me again from 1:30 to 5? And then the next Sunday we'll be at Unity North in Tampa. We'll be doing actually a full week of workshops there. Then the next week we'll be doing a full week of workshops at Unity in St. Petersburg. So come and join us. You can go to our website, whyagain.org, and download all the flyers. Just click on the schedule and go under the link to the flyers, and it'll tell you all the details. Come and play. We'd love to have you with us. In the meantime, bring a stranger to the show tomorrow and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.